What's up, everybody? Jesse here again with a little pre-recorded intro just to kind of give you an idea of what happened over the past couple weeks as to why this is coming out just a little bit late. Saturday night, the night me and Ronnie recorded this, which would have been Saturday 21st, I started getting a little sick. And I could tell it was kind of wearing down. Our household had been fighting off a bunch of crap here, so I was finally starting to feel it. So I did my best. I mean, you know, the episode didn't suffer too bad until we started getting towards the end where I could tell I was getting run down. It was hard for me to put two things together. Luckily, with the power of Audacity and editing here, it won't sound too incredibly bad, but, you know, no guarantees. So at the end of the episode, when it came to plugs, I was just like, I mean, it was tough. So I'm going to take my whole side of the plugs out of there and just kind of give you them in the front of the episode and then turn you loose on the episode here. First off, my sickness ended up turning to pneumonia, which I finally just started getting over here. This is probably about Wednesday night. I finally started feeling a little bit better. And Thursday, I could actually function and enjoy Thanksgiving dinner with my family, which is, you know, thank goodness. So I'm on the mend, editing the episode right now, as a matter of fact, and then we'll have this out to you guys by the 30th, of November. So anyway, as for myself, let me go ahead and plug real quickly the Rattlechin Broadcasting Network on iTunes. If you guys have iTunes and use iTunes, you can find this episode on there pretty easily. We're under the Rattlechin Broadcasting Network umbrella, so if you just go to iTunes, search Rattlech, you're going to find all the shows that the network has to offer, and you could subscribe, and you'd get source material, you'd be able to get all these other great episodes that are in there along with it. Easy to delete if you're not interested in some of the content that's on there. So it's not that big of a deal. But we'd love for you to rate and subscribe if you can on iTunes. Don't forget Stitcher. You can get on there also and give us a listen. As for myself, you can find me on Twitter at Stiznarkey. You can find me on the show's Twitter at SourceMatCast. You can find us on Periscope every once in a while. We have all sorts of fun out there. Don't forget to give the Rattlechin Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like. That will keep you up on top of everything of what's going on in the Rattlechin Broadcasting family. The next show, as for myself, you can catch me on From the Cheap Seats. My co-host duties with Jason Teasley as we talk the NFL. We're a consistent podcast that talks the NFL every Tuesday evening. Granted, unless one of us falls ill and has pneumonia, we did have to miss week 11. I guess I should say Tuesday the 24th of November is the only episode we actually skipped this season so far. So good on us, I would say. And you can catch me on the Metal Hammer of Doom here this past Thanksgiving. Lot of fun. Me and Robert Cooper talked the metal album. Well, excuse me, I shouldn't say that. It's a glam metal album. Celtic Frost, Cold Lake. Had a blast. We roasted a turkey. That's how Coop put it, so had a lot of fun there. Our next episode that we do should be Batman versus Judge Dredd, Judgment on Gotham. Ronnie, I believe, is down to cover that with me, so that will probably, most likely, unless something else is scheduled here, we'll probably shoot for the 7th of December for that one. Either way, folks, I want to thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight, and on with the show. All right. So, Secret Wars 7. By the way, two-shot episode. I know I told you we're going to do Secret Wars Issue 7, and we're going to do Back to the Future number 2.
Yeah.
So, I've been recording here for a little bit, so.
Oh, okay.
Secret Wars number 7, 7 of 9. Now, again, I'm going to give a quick synopsis, as quick as I could possibly make it. And then I'll, you know, we'll talk about some of the things that stood out to us.
Okay.
Really, one of the first things I can say is, like, on the cover, they finally changed it to 7 of 9.
Yeah, thank God.
Yep. And
there's an end in sight.
We find out right at the beginning who the prophet is. But I about just spoiled it right there. we find out who the prophet is, and it's none other than Maximus. Now, if you guys remember correctly, the prophet's been running around gathering all these anti-Doom supporters to basically try and overthrow Dr. Doom, God Doom, if you will. And we find out it's Maximus. Now, I know I've probably asked you before on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this right here did not, like, I wasn't gasping. I certainly wasn't making a face that Esad Ribic here would paint or create with my mouth agape going, holy crap, it's Maximus. But,
yeah.
I mean, what do you think, man? I mean, is this...
I wasn't crazy about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of left me with a who, but then I realized, you know, Inhumans and
he's the brother of Black Bolt?
Yeah, little brother.
Okay. All right, now that jogs a memory, because I'm like just sitting here going, okay, who is this dude? I do not know anything about Marvel Inhumans.
Not too much here.
Calandros.
he
could probably fill us in. But yeah, so Maximus the Mad, I think, is what they called him at some point. Anyway, yeah, it's Maximus. And there's the big revolt. We got an assault on Doom's castle. Doom's sitting there pretty dang confident. And he's just like, you know what? I'm not going out there. I'm not going to get into the heat of battle. And he's like, call my Thors. And so Doom calls his Thors, and unfortunately, the phone just keeps ringing because the Thors are at each other's throats, fighting back and forth, because Lady Thor, or Jane Foster Thor, showed up and apparently has gathered some supporters there and explained what was going on with Dr. Doom. And how this world is a sham. So we got the Thors going at each other now. We got this huge battle going on Doomguard. There's the battle with... We were talking about Mr. Sinister, I think, either last issue or the previous issue before that. Where it was Mr. Sinister and Carol Danvers. They're hanging out. And at first it looks like he's... sided with the Goblin Queen, who's there fighting off the troops of Maximus. He betrays her, and they've made their plans known that they are they're amongst the rebels, I guess you would say. All right, so I just want to talk about how, you know, we see Apocalypse in this battle. We see like I said, Mr. Sinister. I think we see Holocaust show up in this battle.
Yep.
But Mr. Sinister gets the bad side of things.
You could say that.
When he gets himself beheaded by, I think this is by Apocalypse. Apocalypse, like, straight up cuts his head off. But I just want to speak upon the fact, and I understand this is a comic, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. You are not going to be able to talk without lungs. Okay? I don't know how long that Mr. Sinister continues to talk while someone's holding him up by the hair and is just a headless Mr. Sinister sitting there. Well, I should say just Mr. Sinister's head sitting there talking. And anyway, that bothered me. I don't know why. It probably shouldn't, because he should not be able to talk. But I don't know the power of Mr. Sinister. Maybe that's a power he has. His lungs are like behind his brain or something. All right? I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'm
That's
picking.
his mutant power.
So yeah, Apocalypse shows up, and then among. Go ahead.
Of all the things that should bother you in this series, in this book, you pick that, and I think that's hysterical.
Oh, dude. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. The whole this it started off on a bad foot when I didn't understand who Maximus was and why I thought it was such a big revelation. Of course, maybe this is Maximus wasn't part of, was he part of the Ultimates? He was,
No.
wasn't he? Well, in our, well, I'm looking at the Cabal. I said the Ultimates. That was wrong.
Yeah, the cabal he was a part of.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, it just fell flat on me because I don't know much about Maximus. So that got me off on the wrong foot. And then we got all this crap going down that, it's clearly we got this big battle going on. Now the Thors have showed up, and the Thors aren't there to defend Doom Castle Doom there, or God Doom, we should say. There, as a matter of fact, they've showed up, and it's the rep, the Lane, Lady J. Lady
Yeah,
J, we've
they
got a
showed up.
G.I. Joe is now. G.I. Joe was a Marvel property at one point, so dang. Jane Foster Thor showed up with her Thors, and they're helping out the rebels now. So, amongst all this craziness that's going on, Shield Helicarrier shows up, floating in midair, and we see that it's the Maestro. The Maestro brings along his World Breakers, I think, is what he calls them,
Yeah.
and sets loose the Hulks of War. Jeez. Yeah. Sets loose the Hulks of War, and all these Hulks just jump off of the Helicarrier, and they are definitely not supporting God Doom. These guys are another. This is another faction. I guess we would say that is not pleased with the way the things are on the world, and they are there to help out the rebels against. Wow, it's a lot of people
Yeah.
on our side here to try and defeat God Doom.
Right. The crap has definitely hit the fan, and you've got some heavy hitters that are standing against Doom. You've got the Maestro, you've got Sinister, you've got Apocalypse is against Doom, isn't he?
Excuse me. No, he is not.
Oh,
He
that's right. Yeah.
is actually. He says if I have. I think it's in here. He says something like, "If I have to kneel, then these traitors will die. If I have to kneel to Doom, then these traitors will die." So he's definitely supporting
Yeah,
Goddamn.
he and his daddy's little boy, whatever his name is, what is his name?
What is his name? Hold
His
on.
son, and the
Oh,
guy that
Holocaust.
Holocaust,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we got all these big guys. The man, I'm trying to think of the word. You think I would have wrote this down? But there are. I'm not gonna think of it. But anyway, big fight. All right. So during the midst of this battle, we find out that Reed Richards and his ultimate counterpart, the Maker, are figuring out a way to infiltrate God Doom's castle while this battle's going on. Pretty good at distraction. But he's also got a wild card up his hand, up his sleeve, not up his hand. It'd be pretty interesting if he did that. Up his sleeve, and that is the Black Panther. Now, if you remember correctly, I think it was last issue where Black Panther was able to grab a hold of the Infinity Gauntlet.
Black Panther and his pupils.
Has he got pupils? No. Oh yeah, no. No, yeah, no. Depends on what panel you're looking at. But anyway, he's got the Infinity Gauntlet. He's also got the Siege Courageous, which allows teleport anywhere. So Reed reaches out to him, and we find out that Black Panther and Namor are standing outside of one of the walls, one of the Battle World walls, that on the other side house the Marvel zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And now here's something I didn't know, okay? Because this whole King of the Dead stuff, were you aware of that going into this? I mean, has he mentioned that in previous issues? Because we have so many breaks in between.
Yeah.
Black Panther continues to call himself the King of the Dead.
And I don't remember, to be honest with you. I don't know why he's referring to himself as the King of the Dead.
Okay. Yeah, we'll just leave that up to our listeners to try and figure out or let us know as to what the heck's going on. As with many factors of this book, of this particular series, because I actually had to reach out today to one of our podcast buddies over there on Comic Reflections, Nicholas Prom, and I said, listen, I said, has there been any point where the Thing has grown in size big enough to battle Galactus? Because we talked about that. We had never seen anything like that before ever happen with Ben Grimm or the Thing. So Nick is steeped in the comic book history. I listen to his podcast and I enjoy it. And I did get a tweet back here from him.
Very good.
He does say, not that I can recall, there was a time Godzilla was shrunk down and fought the Fantastic Four. So, King of the Dead, way out of left field. Okay, I have no idea where the heck that came from. I should read more comics, we'll just put it that way. Ben Grimm growing to, like, skyscraper size. That's probably happened somewhere, but it's way out of left field. I should read more comics, okay? Stop doing this to me, Secret Wars.
Oh, man, I'm telling you.
I don't want to be confused about stuff. As a matter of fact, I was just watching a few reviews before I came down here on this particular book, and they specifically referenced the Maestro. Did you read... Were you the one that was telling me you read the World War Hulk?
Yes.
Battle World. And you read the end where supposedly... Doesn't something happen like he traps the Maestro in his own mind or something weird like that?
You're talking about not World War Hulk, but...
what is it called?
Future
Imperfect. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, he traps him in... Yeah, pretty much.
So How that's at the end of the book. Maybe it's after this battle. I don't know. But how is the Maestro now out fighting against God Doom? Now, we'll see what happens in these next couple issues, because maybe the way they're going to end this is they'll usurp God Doom, and then they've got to figure out a way to put Battle World back to the regular world. And that would maybe give us an explanation as to how the events in Future Imperfect can occur.
I'm reaching.
It's too much. I'm giving him too much credit. I don't know, man. I mean, that's inconsistent. So, okay. We talked about how... Let me get back to the book here. Black Panther breaks down the wall. The dead come... And of course, the zombies, who usually have nothing but, you know, brains or flesh on their mind, come running out of there, and Black Panther's able to stop them and halt them in their place. Now, whether that be because he has the Infinity Gauntlet, or if it's because he is the King of the Dead, I don't know. But that is a power I never knew he had.
Yes.
I'll have to look that up.
That is my answer. Yes.
All right. Yes. And off they go. They're getting ready to join in the battle, and I'm sure support our heroes. And they are going to, I assume they're going to just, Black Panther's going to lead them through the Siege Courageous and jump right in on the battle. And that's where we end the issue. We do have to talk about, you know, obviously that next issue, the picture, is the Thing decking Galactus. So, hence where we, you know, hence my question. All right, Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy Podcast. What do you got to say about this issue? You got anything specific? I mean, I didn't break down page after page or anything like that, but was there anything that kind of stood out to you in here that you were like, oh, that's pretty neat, or what the heck is going on there?
I like that Zombie Mojo got a spear through his dome. Or not Mojo, but MODOK.
MODOK, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Not a big MODOK fan, but
One less of him ain't too bad.
yeah, exactly. It's cool. It's a cool concept of gathering the forces of getting your army ready and going to overthrow the king. I mean, you've seen it in movies. You've seen it time and time again. So it's still a cool concept to be able to see this happening. See all these worlds coming together and rising up against Doom. I think it is. Here's the but.
Well.
And it's a rather large one. It's just confusing right now. I mean, what's the deal with Maximus? Why is he the chosen one? Why is he the prophet? Why is not chosen one, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, he's a guy running around. What makes him so special? And this is where I almost want this thing to be, another 4 or 5 issues so we could have some explanation.
You stop
I know, dude. That's what I was sitting there. I was like, I want, because I feel like I'm missing something. And maybe what it is, but I've heard different stories that the Battle World books, don't really fill in a whole lot of holes. They're kind of like the story on their own.
Yeah, they are. They're completely a story on their own.
So, I don't like feeling like I miss stuff. That's just the way I kind of feel. And it might be because of my, might be because I'm not, that well versed in all these characters from all these multiverses and blah blah blah. And the first time I ever heard of the Cabal was when I first read issue one or whatever.
Right. Well, the Cabal is a secret war thing, to my knowledge, and it's it's just
The name of those.
the name of that particular faction of bad guys, and it's a pretty new entity in its own, that, to my knowledge, but it just feels like like you said, it feels like there's a lot of stuff missing. Maybe. They'll do a recap, or maybe if I just go back and sit down and read all of them in succession, one through nine, just dedicate an entire evening to it and just reading and trying to fill in the holes. Because when you had like the Infinity Gauntlet, and we'll just use the Infinity Gauntlet, you had all these side stories that kind of filled in some gaps, and when all the heroes were rushing Thanos with he had the Infinity Gauntlet, he only used the I think it was the Power Stone, and they said they still have a 0.001% chance of winning. Yeah, and then he made Hulk really small, and then Hulk was just kind of, he was blown off the earth. Well, I remember getting the issue of the Hulk where it explained what happened to him. You know what I mean? And it filled that gap in. Well, these don't really do that. They're just telling a story of their own, like World War, or Planet Hulk, where Captain America is riding around Devil Dinosaur and, fighting in an arena.
You know,
That was.
that's one character that we have not seen
Yeah.
show up in these main Secret Wars books.
And, reading the new stuff, he's still old Steve Rogers. He's not Captain America anymore, and it kind of ticking me off.
It takes a lot of people off.
I'm not a fan of that. Anytime that there's been a new Captain America, it's Steve Rogers always takes the mantle again, and he picks up the shield and he's Captain America again, because of all people. Steve Rogers is Captain America. It's not Sam Wilson. It's not, Bucky Barnes. It's not whoever else they had. Even when he was doing his nomad thing, he still came back and was Captain America. Well, they're kind of pushing that to the side, and I'm not a big fan of that. Just like I'm not a big fan of X-23 being the new Wolverine, just different things like that. But it's I'm an old man compared to the people that are, getting into the comics now. So I guess I'm just kind of stuck in my ways. But
Yeah.
I digress on that. But it's just these stories that they're telling don't really, they wrap everything up for themselves. Just like I was reading Civil War. It was its own storyline. It was its own. It was held in its own part of Battleworld,
Yeah.
and it was just like they just referenced Dune. They just referenced, kind of things that were going on, but they had their own battle to fight, and it was a good story. Red versus blue, the blue being Capside and the red being
Iron Man.
Iron Man, and different things like that. So, but there's no gaps being filled. And it's kind of frustrating. While it's not as bad of a world changing event as I've seen in the past with like New 52 and things like that, it's still incredibly frustrating for me because I'm like, I need to know what's happening to these characters and why. You read the new stuff and why are these things happening? Why are these things like that? And it's just kind of leaving me hanging, and it's to me, it's a strong word, but it's the word I'm going to use is it's disturbing.
Well, I hear you.
So.
Well, I'm upset that the Goblin Queen got taken out, 'cause I really like seeing her
With
in
a
the
kick to the
comics.
head.
Yeah, Carol Danvers took her out. Yeah, it kind of made my brain hurt a little bit. It's nice to see the big battle getting ready to rock and roll and happen. I mean, yeah, this is supposed to be the issue prior to the final one, before they extended the other one. So it's good, but it just feels like there should be more to the story. And they're so enjoying it. We're gonna see, like, just like we said, we got Galactus versus the Thing on the cover of the next one. Should be pretty
Which is
dang
another
interesting.
thing. That's a big head scratcher on its own.
He punched him right in the face.
He's punching him in the face, but it's Galactus. He's got, I don't know. He's a world eater, man.
I
Come
know,
on.
dude. I know. All right, so folks, that was Secret Wars number 7. You're gonna buy it if you want to continue to read and have collect the whole thing, but it's just, I was sitting there thinking tonight, this is almost one of the things where in like 10 years, I'm going to say, I was around when Marvel did some crazy stuff back in 2015. And where they tried to do a series, they bit off, almost, it seems like they bit off more than they could chew. And then, because of this craziness in regards to getting books out, now we're looking at, I've never seen a storyline say that, okay, everything hinges upon this storyline, but here's everything that's going to happen afterwards. So, first time I've ever seen it. I know I've beat that drum to death, but Secret Wars 7, I'm in it. We're in it for the long haul, folks. So we'll do Secret Wars 8 and Secret Wars 9 once it hits. So be prepared.
Sometime next year.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, on to something a little bit more, just a little bit more fun, in my opinion. I like Back to the Future. It's one of my it's you know it's one of my favorite film franchises. Enjoyed the first issue. I had some had some head scratching questions there as to what was going on in that second story of Back to the Future number 1. So what we had hoped is that we were going to cover Back to the Future 2 and have a little, have a few answers and maybe have a better issue. One issue number 1 wasn't horrible. I enjoyed it. And number 2, I had my fingers crossed. And I don't think I was let down. In my opinion, now again, rose-colored glasses, because it is my favorite franchise. But this particular book, especially the first story. I should go ahead and I'll break down the two stories we have here. The Doc Who Never Was. Story by Bob Gale and John Barber. Script by John Barber. Art by Marcelo Ferreira. Ferrari? Yeah, there you go. Colors by Diego Rodriguez. And then the second story of this book, Science Project. Story by Bob Gale. Script by Eric Burnham. art by Chris Madden, letters by Sean Lee, edits, oh, sorry, I'm going off on the other one here. Letters by Sean Lee, edits by Tom Waltz. Okay, so there's your creative team breakdown. And I'm just going to go ahead and say right now that so far, we've only got two issues in, but this first story, this second issue is my favorite.
Okay.
Right now. Pretty much when we left off last issue, the second story was talking about how Doc had gotten in league with the government when he was a young professor, I believe. He got in league with the government and in fact, helped out on the Manhattan Project. And we were kind of left with like, oh, geez, what is this? You know, we're going to continue this? What's the deal? You know, why just tell us this? It was very, we'll say, anticlimactic because he just,
yeah.
Hey, I'm yeah, sure. And there's, what was that guy's name he met? Oppenheimer?
Yeah, Oppenheimer.
He met Oppenheimer at the end of the issue, and, oh, welcome to the team. Oh, okay. We knew that Doc had a messy house. That was just world, I mean, that was a, I don't know about you, but I think that really just throws the whole Back to the Future franchise into a turmoil. I could not believe that he had a messy house.
I was angry. I was angry.
So it felt kind of anticlimactic, but we get a nice.
I don't know about you, but
yes, sir.
My Doc Brown keeps a tidy house, and I don't appreciate them changing that.
No, sir. Now come on. So we kind of pick up with where we kind of, I mean, I wouldn't say where we left off, but it what we thought was going to happen was they were going to tell a story about how Doc was in Manhattan Project, and we're going to get some cool stories about that. That's not the case. And it frankly is not the MO of the Back to the Future franchise anyway, because where does just about every movie take place and every story take place? That is Hill Valley. So Doc being shipped off to go, you know, go and do the Manhattan Project. Yeah, it would be a neat story, but it wouldn't be sticking in with what we've seen with the franchise before. So maybe they thought it'd feel out of place. Maybe we'll get that story later on down the line. But our government guys kind of show back up. Specifically, I think there's one guy that I think he might have met him in the first issue, but they show back up to Doc's house and try to talk him into doing a time machine. They're like, hey, we want you to do a time machine for us. Specifically, there's one, you know, there's two guys. One's a colonel who's just a real D-bag of a dude, military man. I mean, just really rude to the point and all that stuff, which is, you know, that's how they portray him. And then, you know, Doc's friend, who's part of the project there. So anyway, shows up and says, why don't you do a time machine for us? We were thinking about funding you to do a time machine. Well, Doc has been falling on hard times. He's running out of money. He's trying to figure out how to do this time machine. He's kind of gotten a little bit, you know, kind of gotten a little bit of headway, but he's only made this machine that can transport things back in time. It almost looks like a roll-top desk. It's about the, you know, where he puts objects in there, and it can only transport things back in time to when the beginning of the when the machine was created. So you only got a finite amount here. So he's toying with the idea, making some progress in regards to time travel, and he proceeds to show these government agents, well, hey, look, this is how far I've gotten, and they kind of hem and haw about it a little bit. Specifically, Colonel Matt, whatever the heck his name is. And he then tells him, look, you know, this is something that will definitely work as long as I can get the money. I should be able to take care of this problem and exceed expectations when it comes to time travel. Now, this is going on during the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, because that's important. We got. You know, the fear of nuclear war looms over our head, specifically with, you know, an encounter with the Russians. So they're, you know, when they come to them asking them for, when the government comes to ask you for a time machine, the likelihood of them going to use it for any type of benevolence,
few and far between that that's going to happen. That's not that's, the likelihood of that happening is not the case. So Doc goes to bed, and he is really upset about the he's really at a crossroads where should I go with these guys? If so, I've got all the money I need. And if I don't, I'm still going to struggle. Maybe I won't be able to create the flux capacitor. So he goes to bed and he wakes to a crash. And in his room, Copernicus is barking. Remember, this is the 60s. Marty has already, this is after Marty has showed up and told Doc Brown that, yeah, you're going to build a time machine, blah, blah, blah. Well, Marty shows up. And Marty gets out of the car, yells Doc, and then he proceeds to speak Russian. And I'm like, oh, yes, this is going to be so freaking cool. Doc, immediately hops into the DeLorean. By the way, yeah, it was Marty in the DeLorean, in the spacesuit, just like from part one.
Yep.
So I'm like, yeah, so Doc and Copernicus hop into the time machine. Marty takes them into the future. And I don't even know if he gives a date. I think it was 80-something. Let me look here. I just want to make sure. I think he takes him back in 82 or 80. No, it was 85. Or if 1982.
Yeah.
Shows up in 82, right there, a couple days after my birthday.
Yeah.
Shows up in the middle of Town Square. We can see, which I assume is, yeah, it's Town Square. He says it's Hill Valley. And there's chaos and burning stuff all over the place. What's going on here? These soldiers show up out of the middle of nowhere. And what Doc starts to realize is that what is happening here is that the government has taken control of time. And they're using it as a weapon. We got Roman soldiers fighting, these German-looking soldiers over here. There's nuclear bombs about to drop out of the air. I mean, just all sorts of craziness.
Not just that, but you've got World War II versus the Romans, and that's Fat Man and Little Boy.
Oh, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is, and they're both
they're both dropping at the same time.
Yeah, they're going to drop right on freaking Doc Brown. So all crap's hit the fan, They obviously Marty's come back to tell him, hey, even though he's speaking Russian and Doc has no idea what he's saying, he's showing him what the hell's going on here. We got UFOs in the reflection of the DeLorean window here. It's just all sorts of crap has happened. So he hops back into the time machine. But I shouldn't say he hops back in because he really doesn't. He just looks in, looks to talk to Marty, and Marty's disappeared. Doc's waking up. So here I don't know if it actually happened or if it was a dream. Most likely it was a dream.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point in here. Okay, so Doc wakes up and he's like, okay, I'm not doing this. I can't give the government access to a time machine. Well, we've kind of already passed that point. The government is aware that he has something, and he knows that they're not going to stop until they get it. This is where things kind of get a little crazy, in my opinion. Doc Brown's like, okay, I've got an idea, and he proceeds to cause a paradox, where he takes a letter, writes out a letter, and sends it back in time to where... And then he disappears, like Marty from part one, I guess, where he starts to disappear. He starts to fade away. So the Doc that never was. And we then skip back to the day the government agents show up, and we get one of the things that I was looking for. And I kind of thought they were hinting around to, and that's the explanation as to why Doc's house burned down.
Mm-hmm.
Because Doc Brown sent a letter back in time, and said, hey, these government agents are going to show up. Don't give them the chance to let them know that you have a time machine. And I think I'm just putting things together here, but he mentions that if he sends it back too far, which I think he sent it back like a couple months.
Yeah.
if he sends it back too far, it starts to like overheat and overload the, you know, whatever's going on in that machine. And my guess is, well, I don't know. I don't know if that, when he did that, that caused the fire. The thing is how would Doc have got the letter unless he was sitting there right there when it happened and had the chance to grab the letter. But regardless, the house that he was living in is burnt down when the government agents show up. It's burnt down a couple months prior to when they showed up. And Doc Brown is hiding out in the garage and watches as the government agents walk away. So to me that was a cool story.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that story a lot. I thought it was pretty, you know, it was kind of over the top with how Doc Brown pretty much committed suicide.
Yeah.
He committed suicide by time travel, pretty much erasing himself from existence, which is something that he was, oh, don't do that, which he probably learned his lesson, I guess.
Well, not really,
because
yeah,
and he caused a paradox because now, you know,
there were two Doc Browns. Paradox.
That's a good one.
Thank you. He corrected a mistake that he made by sacrificing himself, his present day self, to because he knew that this past day, you know, his past self would still be there. So he sacrificed his present day self to go back and tell him to burn the house down to get rid of every, you know, get rid of the time machine. And because he said even in this that if he doesn't take, you know, the contract, the government money will never come. But thankfully, he insured the house out the wazoo.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. I didn't even cover that. Yeah. That's how he gets his money is mm-hmm. by. So I don't think the machine caused the problem.
No, I think he just burned it down.
I think he did just burn it down. So he gets the insurance money, and there you go. He's now got the funds to where he can further his research.
And they did it in a way that doesn't make Doc Brown an insurance fraud, you know.
That's true. All right. So that's story number one. You got anything you want to add to that?
No, it was a little convoluted. It was a little, I guess you could say it was a little, little more than I was looking for when I started reading this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a cool explanation. It was a cool side story about Doc Brown, and it just kind of gives you more about his character. He's not just, you know, the crazy mad scientist. It's a little bit of a facade that he puts on to hide the fact that he actually, you know, could have at one point been the man that was responsible for, well, all hell breaking loose on Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he's smarter than what you think, and in more, you know, street smarts, you know, not just book smarts. And he's kind of selfless in that as well. That he sacrificed him, you know, his present day self to go back and say, hey, don't do this. Breaking his own rules and things like that. And that's probably, you know, but it was a cool side story, you know, expounding on Doc's character and finding out why the house burned down.
Yeah. All right. Now the second story, very much like the second story, the first one, in my opinion, just, I'm going to go ahead and put that out there. The second story called Science Experiment. I mean, not a whole lot happens in here other than, you know, Marty's still helping out Doc. This is a point where, prior to them going back in time in 1985, Marty's the assistant. And he's helping Doc out, but he's got a little bit of a problem. He's got to have a science experiment ready for school. He goes around looking through Doc's lab, just pretty much a bunch of lighthearted conversation.
Mm-hmm.
He finds these inventions that Doc Brown has, the tie umbrella.
Yeah.
Is about over. It's just crazy. The spike alarm clock, so you don't hit the snooze button. just crazy stuff. So
tissue box on the head. And
yeah. You know, it's a lighthearted issue, and really, I mean, he's looking around trying to find some things, and something happens to where, Einstein, I think, jumps on Doc, causing him to drop a rod wrapped in wire that lands perfectly on top of a battery and hits both posts and causes an electromagnet. And Marty's perfectly satisfied with that and leaves. However, he makes sure Doc says, I can't find anything else to say about that story other than the final page is just about where it's at, because he just says, next time I see you, make sure, he tells Marty, next time I see you, make sure to bring a case of oil. And the phone rings, and it turns out it's this guy he's trying to get a hold of about buying the DeLorean. That's it. I mean, it's very, very domestic, very laid back, very lighthearted story. I can't say that it really, again, it's like the last issue where the second story was just like ho hum.
Yeah.
However, the only fun thing I could, and I'm gonna ask you this because you may know the answer, you may not. We may have to go to the internet. But I want to know, sir. Okay. On this final panel, we see the DeLorean circled, and you know it's the picture of the DeLorean and the ad down there. Needs suspension work, shocks, brakes, brake pads, steering, transmission, muffler. Has new tires. $4,800 or best offer. Contact Robert. So I'm thinking maybe that's a nod to Robert Zemeckis. I have no idea. But above that, sir, 1978 Ferrari 308 GTS, 240 horsepower, good condition, some bullet holes, mild sun damage, U.S. shipping or local pickup, Honolulu, Hawaii, $20,000, contact Robin. Now, and I may be way off base here, okay, and because I haven't researched it. I didn't look it up, but I immediately thought of Magnum P.I.
Oh, that's definitely Magnum P.I.
How does the Robin figure into that? Any idea?
That was the house he was staying at. It belonged to Master Robin.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. See, I everything else, what keyed it into me was Honolulu, Hawaii. I was like, oh, and the Ferrari.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The bullet holes, I kind of get it. Magnum P.I.
Yeah. Robin was the author of and the owner of the house where he was staying in the guest house, and he was his head of security.
Gotcha. Who was that Higgins?
Higgins.
It was Higgins.
It was. I'm a big Magnum P.I. fan. That's not something I really broadcast, but it's still on. I mean, it comes on this one Encore, and you know, Encore is supposed to be all about movies.
Yeah.
But they show Magnum P.I. and Night Court just about every weekday night at 7 and 7:30. So.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yes. And if I am home at 7 or 7:30. My night's booked, man. You better not call me or text me.
That's
I'm watching Magnum P.I.
Oh, shoot. What'd you think of the book, man? What'd you think of issue two?
First story was, I got behind it. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I you know, like I said, it was a little much at times, but I did enjoy it. It was cool to see, you know, them expound, like I said, on Doc Brown's character and his, you know, his story and everything. But, The second story is, like you said, is a little ho-hum, and it's a little, I don't know, it's too much like a Saturday morning cartoon kind of thing.
You know what? It's so funny that you say that, because the art is almost drawn
like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Exactly. It feels mm-hmm. like that. He's got, I mean, he puts on these goofy eye drop glasses, which is about the goofiest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And you wonder about Doc Brown at this point as to... he's got a box that says not radioactive,
right?
Stuff that is piled in this box, and you know, crazy crackpot inventor. But yeah, it Saturday morning cartoon. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh no, you're fine. I mean, that's just basically it. It feels like a Saturday morning cartoon. It's a throwaway story.
It is.
It's filled with silly humor. It really doesn't follow along the same lines as any of the characters or anything that we've seen. Not really.
Not that I can see, no.
I mean. Yeah. And, I mean, that's not really Doc Brown and Marty, you know. So it's more kid-friendly than the movies and then the other story that we've seen, because the other story was, you know, it's pretty heavy. He meets Dr. Oppenheimer. He could, you know, he had a part in...
Heavy.
Yeah, heavy. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Did you know you said that?
No.
See?
Yeah.
Good one.
But it's just, yeah, it's kind of like one of those things where, like, I might have liked it when I was 10. You know, just the wacky adventures of Doc and Marty before, you know, they got the DeLorean. Mm. But I don't know. I just didn't care for it.
You're right. It feels throwaway. I mean, really, like I said, the only thing that really almost matters, unless somehow, which it may very well happen, this whole electromagnetic thing comes back into play in the next issue.
Right.
That would make sense to me if that happens. You know, the point that Doc Brown is trying to get across to Marty is like, hey, I can't help you. And he says in here, the essence of science is discovery. And, you know, he accidentally causes this electromagnet to happen.
Voila. Quote, unquote, accidentally.
Yeah. So, and the only real takeaway from this is like, hey, we're getting the DeLorean. Doc Brown's mm-hmm. going to buy the DeLorean. And it's... just it's not as, you know, what it really makes me think of, it makes me think that Bob Gale is almost afraid to tell a really involved story.
Yeah,
because he doesn't want to mess it's his concept, and I can't criticize right. the man for doing that.
No, not at all. No, I'm not saying they did anything wrong. It's just it's not something that I enjoy because it's too much of a throwaway character. It's too Saturday morning cartoon. It's too TGIF, you know. We just talked about this on our show, but it's too, the TGIF sitcom kind of feel. You know, it's like something that they would write for the ongoing adventures of, you know, Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And... you know, oh no, Marty needs to, you know, he forgot about his science experiment, so who better to go to than Doc Brown? And Doc Brown teaches him the lesson to where the canned studio audience goes, oh, you know, and then, you know, but, you know, like, wah, 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 he learns his lesson, everybody's happy, roll credits.
Mm-hmm. Before I get any further, sir, please go ahead and plug your stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. I'm on I have a movie podcast, myself and Adam Runyon. We talk about, everything about movies. It's called Screaming Boy Productions. We do old movies, new releases, you know, the whole nine. And so we just, of course, through... October, we did a bunch of Halloween episodes, and then we had two special guests come on. I got to interview Dean and Star Jones. They actually run the Hollywood Haunt Show here in North Carolina, so every Halloween they have the best haunt around. And what sets it apart is the makeup, because they both worked on multiple films, and you know, in the makeup department, you know. X-Men First Class, the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise. Dean won an Emmy for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the whole nine, so I got to interview them. We took a couple weeks off, just, you know, recharging the old batteries, and getting everything ready and getting everything done and getting the computer to work and things like that. So we came back, this is Monday night, so we released a new episode Saturday night, and it is all about movie trailers. We talk about why people like movie trailers, and we talk about 10 movies that had trailers that were much better than the actual movie. And for some reason, we have an in-depth discussion, I guess you could call it in-depth, about Bob Saget. So that was interesting, but so it was really cool getting back behind the mic again and talking to Adam about all this stuff. So check it out. You can check this out on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and the Radio Lichen Broadcasting Network. You can catch us on Twitter at Screaming Boy PR, as well as Periscope at Screaming Boy PR. And then you can find us on Instagram at Screaming Boy Productions and www.screamingboy.com.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. Yeah, I'm enjoying that episode right now as we speak. Great stuff. You guys ought to go check it out. Screaming Boy Productions is where it's at.
All right, this is an oldie, but, well, it's an oldie where I come from.